to our first speaker.
Great, thanks so much, Ian. I understand there's a microphone that's picking it all up. Can you hear me at the back? Just checking. Super, great. My name's Stuart Andrews. I am not a gamer. I feel very relieved saying that in the group. Thank you for having me here. I come from Arts and Humanities. I'm really interested in intersections between arts and resilience. So what I'm going to do is suggest some things. I'm going to pose some questions, share some material. I'm going to cover quite a range of material because I'm not sure what's most relevant. If there's a moment for a question afterwards or in the session, I'm happy to do that. But I kind of think if I can just plant some seeds, then maybe one or two, I mean even just one might be useful. If I can get one useful seed, great. Okay, could I have the first slide? And then the next one. Brilliant. Thank you so much, Guy. Okay, so I work with colleague Patrick Duggan at Winchester, part of Southampton University, on a project called Performing City Resilience. We've been doing this for about 7 or 8 years, and we're really interested in the fact that emergency and resilience planners in cities, particularly working cities particularly, internationally are dealing with particular challenges. We're also aware that artists in those cities are addressing particular challenges. And we're aware that those people basically never meet. And so what we do is find nice, convivial, genial ways of connecting them. But we don't just want them to connect together. We want strategic change to happen in both areas. So artists' understanding, we work in New Orleans quite a lot, so artists' understanding of flood, race, and economic inequity challenges, that's a substantial body of knowledge. And we're interested in working with emergency planners in the city to think about how that knowledge and the practices can be involved in city strategy, and we've been working in New Orleans since about 2018. So broadly, how can concepts, strategies, and practices of performance, in very broad terms, this is a performance. When Homeland Security turn up to an event in the US, that is a performance. So how do you dress? What do you bring? What do you do? All of that. Broadly conceived performance, how does that contribute to and reconfigure ideas, practices, and strategies of resilience for organisations and communities? This is primarily not military, but it may well have intersections and connections, and I'm very interested in the ways in which it might relate to a whole range of different areas. We're looking at aesthetic performance, so work by artists. We're also looking at social performance, everyday practice. We're looking at developing new knowledge, so new ideas, but we're also involved in getting real-world impact, so we are having significant change in the world. Next slide, please. We've done some publications. I'm standing in front of a QR code. That's entirely unhelpful. If it's in any way, you could just hold up your phone. You don't have to press the button. You could just hold it up and get really excited. We've done stuff for Crisis Response Journal. This is out last month, Performing New Orleans, Rethinking Resilience in Art and Everyday Life. We've done other things. Loads of it's open access on our website. We like taking topics like whole society resilience that are current topics and thinking about how the arts speak to them. Next slide, please. How am I doing? Sometimes I talk very, very quickly. If I am, just wait a minute. I'm too fast. Slow it down. We've not had enough coffee. Right. This is what I'm really talking about today. I'm interested, as someone who doesn't play war games, but who watches games being played quite a lot, in the fact that you're above, often, a map, a board, a something, and you're also in a space at the same time. Can I have the next slide, please? So what I'm interested in is here. This is one of the situation rooms it's close to one of the situation rooms in New Orleans. A huge map of the city there. I'm interested in these decision-making places. So these rooms where games are played, where ideas are done, where stuff happens, where people make some kind of sense of this is what we will do in the world. And I'm interested in these boards, these things, which are the places of interest, the places they're engaged in. If we can think about the form of this room and the place and the practices of this room, and we can think about the form and the practice of the place that is being performed and the relationship between the two, then there may be routes to enhancing the games that are being played, enhancing the decisions. There may not be, but it might be interesting to look at those formations of place. Can we have the next slide? So I'm suggesting that there are two, and this is blunt, this is not always true, but broadly there's a sense that we have an immersive performance. So if you're aware of the performances by companies like Punch Drunk, where you wear a mask and you wander into a building and you wander around and you see bits of performance, it's quite an immersive environment. When you're in a game, that is an immersive environment with in a particular environment. We've also got representations of places of interest, and they necessarily are not those places. We don't bring China in on wheels to look at it. We're having to represent it in some way. The way we represent it must be critical to the way in which we understand that place. there are surely the way in which we design that map of China, say, will impact on the way in which we think about that place when we are having some kind of response to it. If we're doing flood resilience maps, for instance, do we need local artists from the place to draw those maps? Because their knowledge of that city and those places and the fragility of those places is really key. So who is doing the work? Do we need to be creating the work in the moment? So emergency planners and local people living in flood-affected areas are crafting the map together. So in terms of theatre, these are poles apart. Representational theatre is like old school, standing on a stage like this. The days are done. That's not true. I teach theatre. I hope they're not done. But immersive performance, when you're in and among people, is a much more live and engaging thing. So I'm interested in a number of ways in which we think about performance in place. Next slide, please, Guy. And the next one as well. So however few artists approach places. I did a talk here a while ago, and I referenced this case study. My apologies if you saw that talk too. I have got other ones this time too. So this is an artist, Stephen Hodge, who created a project called Where to Build the Walls That Protect Us. And what I like about this performance is he asked individuals who were involved in the performance to wander around Exeter with experts on flood resilience. It feels like I'm only talking about flooding. I also have other interests. So he got experts on the city and experts on flood management wandering around the space. And he then got them sitting down playing with Lego, thinking about where it might be useful to put walls. So they are both above the city, planning and thinking about this, but they're also within the city, exploring, wandering down narrow streets, talking with experts who give them different perspectives on the streets. So in terms of understanding the place which people are enacting decisions upon, they've got these multiple points of beginning. Can we try the next slide? Anna Mendes created a project a few years old now, map series. This one, so she was interested in intersections between Portugal, where she lived, and Brazil, and reflecting on slave connections, on historical colonial connections there. And so she sat at, it's not a very good photo, it's quite arty, but it doesn't really show what's going on. She is there with a sewing machine, sewing together maps of Brazil. What happens if we sew together maps of China and America? What happens if we tear maps up and then stick them together? What happens if we take a printed map and we sew onto it and we have a material, a fabric, a crafted aspect to it? Why are we making everything from map? And I'm not, this sounds like I'm judging, I'm not, I'm just interested. Why are we making things out of plastic? Why aren't we making them out of wood? Why aren't we making them ourselves? That notion of changing something in 15 minutes in the last speaker's talk, I thought it was fascinating. That sense of we can do it now in the moment. So I'm interested by the materials that are being made and the fact that she's there making the maps and people are wandering around seeing them on the walls and also seeing the process of making. So there's a process of thinking going on in the putting together a map, and then that thinking is placed on the wall that you can then see and imagine. So how might we engage in maps with maps in new ways? Next slide, please. Remoteness. So lots of artists are interested in remoteness, and I wonder whether remoteness is an interesting thing, because in a game, you are remote often from the situation that you're reflecting on. So how can we make people playing that game feel more remote, less remote? You may be very familiar with this thing, and I know there are lots of games that explore this kind of stuff. But, for instance, Blast Theory has done a... If you don't know Blast Theory, look them up. They're awesome. They've got a whole range of really highly interactive performance projects. You go off and you find some kind of right-wing radical cell, and you have to find them. You then inform on them and stuff in a pub. So they've done stuff that explore remoteness. So there might be something by Blast Theory that might be interesting to look at and go, oh, actually, there's a thing I could riff off that. The other thing I love is Outlandia. It's room in the woods in Scotland. It's totally disconnected. What would it be like to play a game there? What would it be like for one player to play a game there and somebody else to be somewhere else in the woods? It's quite hard to get between them. So how can we play with the idea of being remote and recognise that notion of being remote? We have another slide, please. This one. This isn't really performance, so it's stretching the boundaries of performance. These maps, I think, are beautiful. Also, very good gifts. Where's the harm? So these are by Rebecca Solnit, sometimes in collaboration with others. She has one, An Infinite City on San Francisco, one, Nonstop Metropolis on New York, and one, Unfathomable City on New Orleans. What I love about these is she invites a whole series of map makers to create maps of these cities. So there's not just one map of a city, there's loads of maps. Can we see one of the maps, please? So this is the New Orleans one. And the map is created by Shizwe Sigel, and it's called Of Levees and Prisons. And it's a map of levees and prisons in New Orleans, and probably southeast Louisiana. So the we're only seeing something, we're seeing two things that in a way have no connection, except they are holding people, water. It's about holding things together. So is it interesting to create maps that only show certain things, that trouble our sense of a place as a whole and go, let's focus in on things that seem disconnected, but might help us understand how levees function, what holding in, holding back is. So they might help us think through challenges that are profoundly affecting this landscape. Next one, please. Okay, next. How are we doing for time, Ian?
You've got about 10 minutes.
Oh, fine, great. Okay, so I'm now going to do some theory. And initially I wasn't going to do this, but I just wondered whether it might be useful. So I'm doing tiny bits. I don't want it to be dull. If you look very sad, I will just stop and skip this bit. Can we try the first slide? So, and this is, if you're pros on philosophy, then this is going to be like scraping, I don't know, something on an LP, but because we're just going to go at speed. A notion here and there. We are here, other people are there. That means they're other. That means they're different to us. That means generally we probably won't get on with them, and we'd rather they stayed over there. And suddenly there's a whole politics in the over there. So actually any game, surely, and this is where we'll probably get into a fight, and it's quite a lot of you, so I'll lose. That the risk is, surely, of all gaming, that otherness is inevitable. So how are we restricting otherness? Or how are we building it in? Like with your excellent social ludo game, where you've got multiple theirs. And then it's awful, because you have to go to so many theirs to try and fix things. So how are we playing with here and there? How's the place of interest? Now, I don't know the terminology here. I'm using place of interest because that's the thing that we're looking at. It's China, or it's a housing office, or whatever it is. And then how are we dealing with, how are we identifying here? And the risk is we call here a room, but actually, games could be played anywhere, so it feels like there should be a game place and a place of interest. But there probably is terminology, because I'm not a game writer, I don't know it. But how important are people, objects, places, sensory aspects? What does it feel like to be in a room? How cold is it? How warm is it? What's our sense of, how nice is it to touch the map? Is it like, oh, this is quite nice? I don't really want to bomb this place because it feels quite nice. What are we doing through constructing places in certain ways? How might we think more broadly about here and there-ness? Can we do another slide, please? How are we doing? Am I talking too quickly? Or is that okay?
Just good.
Great. Thank you very much. That's excellent. Maybe you'll get something. Thank you. Thanks. Okay, above and below. This is where I started with a sense of maybe there's something to look at here. So, Michel Desserteaux, you may know him. I don't know. He's, I imagine he's dead. Certainly not as well as he was. And so he wrote a book called Walking in the City, and he was at the top of the World Trade Center in New York, and he was looking down at the city. And he wrote this. To be lifted to the summit of the World Trade Center is to be lifted out of the city's grasp. One's body is no longer clasped by the streets. It transforms the bewitching world by which one was possessed into a text that lies before one's eyes. It allows one to read it, looking down like a god. Now, I don't know if it's a good thing to be a god, it's the wrong conference, but I do think there is something fantastic about that sense of being removed from the life of the street, up and then looking down on it. And that is what we're doing when we're looking at a map. And so we kind of need to acknowledge that, and then how is that, we'll acknowledge that, fine, but how is that interesting? How can we look at levels of aboveness? So he suggests the ordinary practitioners of the city, these people, live down below the thresholds at which visibility begins. Their bodies follow the thicks and thins of an urban text they write without being able to read it. So we watch somebody come along here and there's a car and we just miss it, and we read it like a book. Not a book, but something else. A video. The risk is, though, that privileges that view from above. And so Doreen Massey, for instance, went, hang on, sunshine. There's another way. And she talks about the thrown togetherness of place. Urban spaces as moments of encounter, collision, touching, fighting, engaging, ignoring. If we're creating static representations of place, then we can't get any of this within the static representations of place easily. Maybe we can. Maybe there are ways of fixing it. Maybe we can't fix that. But maybe there's a risk of presenting places as being too neat, not full of the thrown togetherness of things. And maybe you're familiar with this, and there are lots of injects where some crowds come in and everything gets a bit messed up. And this may be very familiar within gaming, this is because I'm not a gamer, I don't know. But my sense is, within urban studies, this is a massive problem. And so certainly an interesting conundrum, if not a problem within gaming, particularly when we're modelling urban spaces. next week. Andre Carrera suggests that streets, squares and pavements are areas of permanent dispute. I think Andre lives in a risky area. But he suggests as different forces struggle to establish uses and identities that define fragments of the city. And maybe this isn't true in all cities, maybe some are a bit sleepy. But that sense of the notion of spaces being... there's a potential of an identity of a shift. It's not necessarily a power struggle in a kind of real fighting power struggle. It's just a shift of perspective. Is there a way in which such shifts can be important in game design? In a war game, is it productive to be aware of places as being in flux or in dispute? How do war games conceive of manage place disputes? How do we sense the management of place dispute in the place of interest? And how do we manage those disputes from afar? What dialogue might exist between local disputes and remote players? So can we have some sense of echoes and connections there? Can the awareness of locally disputed place enhance the practice of wargame? And then how do we represent dispute, conflict, insurgency, instability? Does the framing impact on or even invite our response? So by saying this place is a place of dispute, suggests we might need to deal with it, whereas actually that might be fine. So are there games, and maybe there are, where conflict and dispute are just actually relatively fine because that is the nature of life and spaces. We'll change the time. I'm also intrigued, there's too much here, and it is scattergun, but hopefully some of it, again, one seed, that's all I need. Life-size and miniaturise. We're like actual-size people. Often games are not. And so I'm interested, so Richard Yarwood was writing about recreational games, but I kind of sensed it might also speak to war games as well. So miniaturisation can allow participants to imbue their own characteristics on the production of space through models. It's that notion of, well, what is an individual's characterisation of space? How are you characterising, how are any of us characterising spaces? How are we making tiny things? There's a fascination in tiny things, and I could have spent a lot of time looking at this. But that sense of crafting, creating, what is that sense of, what does it mean to miniaturise the world? There's a whole bit of stuff to muse on there. Can it help fix certain political viewpoints? Because the way in which we frame people, characters, situations, water, can make us read it in certain ways that might be problematic. If you're doing a flood map, does the water look like it's coming anyway, whatever you do? Or does the water look quite comfy? Maybe not comfy, but like you might go for a swim. The depiction of water surely is really important. Particularly when miniaturised. Super, so 3 minutes. Yeah. That's awesome. I think I'm talking too much of you. But I'm nearly about to finish, so hopefully it'll be okay. Next slide, please. Possible questions. Okay, so I thought you wouldn't have questions, so I've made some of my own. But that's not true. It's just nobody has questions. I'm like, why don't I have questions? Then I feel I've failed, and then I won't be able to go home and say I've had a good day. But the questions I've got for all of us, can we make maps less static? That's my question. I don't know what the answer is. Can they be less empty? Maps are, I mean, also, they're really full, and I understand that. But often in a game, we might not include all of the things in a place, so what are we including? So can they be less... Can they show the dispute, the change, the shift in a season, in a day, and in anything? How can maps reveal the embodied processes... I don't know why there's a comma there. Embodied processes, instability, nuance, and risk. How can we see the risk of a place? If we look at water in a map and it doesn't look risky and we're dealing with flooding, that's a problem. So how can we make maps to look riskier? More peril in map design, that's what I like. How are we in and between places? How are we here and there, above and below, local and remote? There's a bunch of other things. And how can we not just acknowledge those and go, okay, that's the nature of the beast, but go, this is actually quite an interesting challenge and there's some interesting betweenness. And maybe it is really exciting to be in a place on a map and in a place in a room. And then outside talking about it, having a coffee, and then coming back in again. And I know there are lots of examples of games where people, when playing the game, will move between rooms and do different things in different rooms in highly crafted and considered ways. So there's really exciting stuff going on, but is there more that could be happening? How can we creatively use the complications of being in different and multiple places? Can we be in a between different modes of performance, immersion, some form of representation? In liminal, intersecting, edge-down spaces. What if we perform the game over here? How is that different in that hidden away space that is a rubbish example, you can't see it. But how is that different to playing it here? So where we're playing the game, even with a room, in a room, surely seems key. Can we productively incorporate playful performance strategies of disruption, intervention, multiplicity? And is this useful? Artists do this all of the time. Like, first thing they do in the morning is some intervention. If any of those terms are useful, have a look at artists like Glass Theory who are engaging place in interesting intervening ways, because it just might spark interesting thoughts on your own practices. Is it productive to explore materials of representation? So got quite excited by the idea that in my 7-8-year-old daughter has just got a 3D pen and printing pen. I don't even understand it. She's very excited. But are we should we be making things out of plastic, certainly in a world that's dodgy? What happens if we made things in a much more handmade way? What happens if we put the handmade and the printed together and we blurred and mixed media together? Maybe it would do nothing. Maybe it would spur interesting conversations and thoughts. So I offer it as a musing. I think I might be done. Yeah, that's it. Super. I hope this hasn't been awful. Thank you very much for listening and smiling through it at different times. I'm very grateful to you. I'm here at Brunel. My name's Stuart Andrews. I have to rush off because I have to pick up the kids later on, so I won't be here for much chat, but if it's interesting, do get in touch. Thank you very much. I've done.